and welcome to the Trust Your Body Project. Trust Your Body Project is a podcast and social media movement designed to help you heal, eat, and create space for the things that truly matter. I'm your host, Whitney Catalano. I'm an anti-diet, health at every size registered dietitian, helping you stop dieting, make peace with your body, and take the power back from your inner bully. Welcome to episode number 34. On this week's episode, we are talking to Erin Garrity, who is a yoga therapist, recovery coach, and a yoga studio owner. She is the author of the book Thriving After Addiction and has a podcast by the same name. And as you can imagine, today we are talking about addiction and eating disorders and overworking, actually, and how all of these things can go hand in hand. You know, not everyone who struggles with addiction has an eating disorder and vice versa. That's not the point. What we're talking about today is just the different ways in which we tend to cope and dissociate from our emotions, dissociate from being present, and avoid uncomfortable feelings, be for whatever reason, because they weren't allowed growing up or because it was modeled to you that way or whatever trauma you experienced to have that be a survival technique for you, and how to really identify these patterns and find grounding, find presence, find your reconnection with yourself after years of dissociating and disconnecting, and just what it means to be in recovery if you or someone else is struggling with addiction. Because I think there's this theme or this question I get all the time around eating disorders or disordered eating or diet recovery, where it's like, if you learn how to deal with your emotions through your diet recovery process or even through like an addiction recovery process, you're never allowed to cope again, or you're just never, you know, a perfect recovery means that you're never going to cope again. You're always going to be able to feel your feelings. And that's just not the case at all. So Erin really shed some light on that, talks about how she is able to stay connected with herself and keep showing up for herself, because this is a practice. Connectedness with herself is a practice. And some of the tools that she uses, some of the advice that she gives her clients. And overall, it's just a really amazing conversation. So even if you have no history with addiction, you're going to get a lot out of this conversation. And if you do have a history of addiction, or if you have family members or friends who are struggling with addiction, she actually gives some really great advice too on what to do if you have loved ones who are. So I wanted to make sure to ask her that, because I know I have clients and I have past clients and friends who struggle with that. And I struggled with that at one point with my dad, as you all know, if you listened to the first episode. So it's very personal to me, and I was really happy to talk to her. I think you're going to really like her episode. I have a little more to say on that topic, but for right now, I'm just going to start off this episode with an announcement. So if you have been following me on Instagram, you probably already know what I'm going to say, which is that I signed a book deal. Woo! Yeah, so starting in January, I'm going to be writing a book, which is honestly wild. The book is going to be all about emotional eating, and I'm writing it with Victory Belt Inc. Publishing, there we go, who found me on Instagram, wanted to break into the anti-diet space because they realized that, you know, diet books are just not the direction, like not the type of content that they want to be putting out, which I loved. I'm going to be their first anti-diet author, which is just freaking awesome. Ah! But yeah, so I'm writing a book all about emotional eating, and it's due really quickly. It's going to be final copy before edits, obviously, is due in April, and I'm starting in January. So it's going to be a really intense 4 months for me. I am like blown away because I have wanted to write a book for forever. Honestly, this has been a dream of mine for so long. And I thought that it would be a couple years before I did. I thought that I would need to get more, you know, time under me or get more recognition or whatever before I would have this opportunity. And, you know, the world has a really interesting way of throwing you curveballs and challenges before you're ready and forcing you to become the person who is ready, or at least the person who does it even if you don't feel ready. So I definitely am being called to step up in so many ways right now and just grow into this new version of myself, which is so crazy because I mean, this year I have undergone like so much deep growth, as you all know, and I'm sure have witnessed along this podcast. Like, I feel like this podcast is, even though I don't talk about myself that much, I feel like this podcast is such a time capsule for me, because like all of my major growth in my business and in just so many ways has been this year. And it's just so cool. So, You know, this morning I sat down with my assistant and we planned out all of my goals for 2020, including, you know, group programs or retreats, which I'm not going to say more than that, but it's going to be a good retreat, and just other things that I have going on next year. And everything has dates and everything is about to be broken down into tasks so that I can really focus my energy efficiently and I don't fall into overworking and I don't fall into neglecting my self-care or, you know, working myself dry, because that's really where I sacrifice the quality of my work. There's more that I'm going to explain on this, but what I do want to say is that I will be limiting my one-on-one clients that I take on starting in probably the beginning of February. Right now, I'm just trying to do as many clarity calls as I can with people who are interested in one-on-one coaching so that I can get my coaching schedule down and like figured out, because if you don't know, I like to just have a standing appointment every other week with my clients. And so we always meet at the same time. There's no guesswork. There's no shifting around schedules. It's just very easy. And I want to get that together and set so that I can really focus my energy and plan my time accordingly and take care of myself. Because if I'm not taking care of myself, then it's not going to be good. Okay. So that means that I'm taking on new one-on-one clients, and I'm finishing up with a bunch of clients right now. So I definitely have space, and then I'm going to be capping it at a certain point. So if you've been thinking about doing my one-on-one coaching and waiting until the time's right, or, you know, waiting until you're quote ready, like now is the time. You're ready now. Just in the same way that when I signed that book contract, I didn't feel ready. I didn't feel like, oh yeah, I could write a book, but I did it, because the only way to get ready is by doing it. So if that's you, if you're like, I don't know, I've been wanting to do it, but I just don't know if now's the right time, or I want to wait or whatever, just do it now. I promise you, it is so beyond worth it. And it's not as scary as you think it's going to be. Yes, it's hard work to heal your relationship with food. Like, there's no question about that. And I'm there holding your hand every single step of the way and loving on you and being your advocate and cheering you on and all of the things. So that means going out to eat without worry, buying new clothes without freaking out over the size, feeling confident when you walk into a room, no matter what your body looks like that day or how you feel about your body that day. Because that's the goal, right? To continue to live your life huge, like live a huge life, even if you're having the worst body image day, and not letting it get in your way, not letting it, you know, stop you from doing things or drive you to do things that maybe you wouldn't want to do with your body or with food. And ultimately just clearing up all of that brain space so that you can stop thinking about food and your body so much and focus on the shit that like really, really matters in this world. Because there's so much that matters. I'm sure there's so much. Like, I know a lot of you are perfectionists and very driven and have so many goals and so many dreams, and your desire to make everything perfect like stops you every time. And if that's you, like, I'm here to help with that as well. This is so much more than just about the food. This is an entire reworking of how you approach your life and show up for yourself and show up in the world more grounded, more authentic, more aligned. So if you give yourself that gift of investing in your healing, you can literally have all of this, like a completely new headspace before summer, which is wild. My clients make such dramatic and fast transformations in their healing process because we really just dive in, we go for it. And that's what we're doing here. So if you've been wanting that, if you're like, okay, no, I cannot spend another day doing this anymore, going back and forth, then I am here to help you with that. My one-on-one coaching is open. You can apply for a clarity call at whitneycatalano.com/book. That's whitneycatalano.com/book. And we will schedule something as soon as possible so we can see if we're a good fit and I can support you on that call regardless. Make a quick disclaimer that this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only, is not a substitute for individual medical or mental health advice. And yes, there's more this week. I want to warn you that there are a lot of sensitive topics in this episode. So Erin talks about her addiction to diet pills and prescription pills. She briefly talks about her history with binging and purging. And towards the end, she briefly mentions abuse from a family member. So if any of these topics are triggering to you or will put you in a headspace that is unsafe or unhealthy, please, please, please just skip this episode. Like, don't put yourself in that situation. Take care of yourself first. I will be fine. Like, please take care of yourself. Out of respect for her story, I didn't censor too much. There were some things where I debated censoring because of just the sensitive nature of the content, but I didn't want to censor her life experiences that didn't feel aligned with what I'm trying to do here. So I'm just giving you like a super heads up that there are some moments. Ultimately, this is like a very beautiful episode, and I really hope that it isn't too triggering for you and you are able to stick around. But if not, like, please take care of yourself. And yeah, that's kind of it with that. Listen with caution. Okay, that was a little bit of a tease because normally we jump straight into the interview after the transition music. But before we get into all of that, I know there's a lot in this episode, but I'm running out of episodes for the season. So you gotta let me just go with it, okay? Before we get into that, this podcast is brought to you by Club TYB. Now, Club TYB is my membership support group, which I like to call your online food freedom family. As I've said many, many times on this podcast, my one-on-one coaching is a huge commitment and a huge investment, like I literally just said, because I only can really take on a certain number of clients energetically at one time. And, you know, after talking to a lot of you on Instagram and hearing about how much you're loving the podcast, I realized that a lot of you are going through this healing process alone. And that's why I was so inspired to make a diet culture free space on the internet for you to heal together that was much more accessible than my coaching or, you know, anything else. That was kind of the same as if you were to join a diet support group or something like that, except way better, in my opinion. So, I mean, the reality is, healing from diet culture when you're living in diet culture is so complicated and frustrating. If you don't actively seek out a community to support you, you can end up even more isolated during recovery than you were while dieting. And, you know, it just really gets in the way of your healing. I talk to a lot of you who are feeling so stuck because you have no one to talk to about this stuff. And talking it out can make the biggest difference. It takes the power away from the thoughts, the inner bully thoughts that are going on. So if you need a place to go talk out the confusing moments when your inner bully is just like practicing its all too familiar scripts and trying to convince you that you're not doing this right or you're not good enough, Club TYB can be that space for you. So this is a place full of people who get it and people who are there to support you and ask for your support when the people in your life maybe don't quite get it in the way that you need to. So if you want to join Club TYB, you can join for only $19 a month or less than 75 cents a day, and you'll be added to a private Facebook group filled with people dedicated to healing their relationship with food. You get unlimited access to me. I'm checking the Facebook group all the time, responding to your questions, going live in the Facebook group just to answer questions, and I give you a ton of information to help you with your healing journey. Every Monday, you get a weekly journaling prompt and a conversation starter in the Facebook group, which has been really fun for me to watch as the group continues to grow because everyone in the group just gets so into it. Like, they're, you know, really being vulnerable and answering the questions and reflecting, and it's just awesome to watch. So I do that. Every Wednesday, we have affirmations, and then every Friday, we have a place for you to celebrate your wins. And then on top of all of that that's happening in the Facebook group, we also have two live streams a month, like official live streams. One of them is by myself, where I do a deep dive topic, and then the other one is where I interview an expert on a topic that I don't know enough about, and neither do you. And so you get to ask the expert questions, you get to ask me questions live. I'm also going to be incorporating some hot seat coaching into the group probably next month in January. So I'm really excited about some of the changes that are coming up. This month in Club TYB, I did a call actually this week about setting New Year's intentions. Well, I guess it was last week by the time you hear this. Setting New Year's intentions instead of resolutions, why I like intentions instead of resolutions, and how to go about doing that so you don't feel disappointed, and how to deal with other people's resolution talk, because that's just, it's so annoying. And then I'm having Julie Duffy Dillon come in to the group to talk about food freedom and PCOS and answer any of your questions live. So I'm really excited for that because she is just like one of the most well-versed people I know in PCOS, and she's very firmly anti-diet, and it's awesome. We need more of that. And then in the Facebook group this week, people are talking about struggling with perfectionism, anxiety about being weighed at the doctor's office, holiday pressures and challenges, and they're helping each other navigate those and problem solve, which is really fun to watch. And more, honestly, more threads about doctors who really need to just not comment on weight because, you know, you think they would listen to my podcast and learn, but I guess not. So if you want to be part of these conversations or you need support with something, you can join Club TYB at WhitneyCatalano.com/club-TYB. That's WhitneyCatalano.com/club-TYB. And for those of you who are embarking on your recovery journey alone or who have been dabbling with food freedom but need more concrete, actionable steps and just need to know that you're on the right path, I created a course called The 5 Pillars of Food Freedom, which essentially gives you like all the information that you need for a solid foundation for food freedom so that you can feel confident that you're moving in the right direction. It's more than what you would read in a lot of books because it covers like the 5 main topics that I cover with every single client, and it will get you started and feeling so confident in less than an afternoon. So that mini course is available on my website at winniecatalano.com/pillars for only $49, or you can get this course entirely free when you join 6 months of Club TYB. So if you join 6 months of Club TYB and pay for the 6 months, you are not only saving $70 because I'm also giving you a month of Club TYB free, but you're also getting that whole course for free, which is awesome. So winniecatalano.com/club-TYB. This is such a great option if you are on this journey by yourself and you need some support. I got you. So this is my attempt to make information accessible to as many people as possible, and I'm going to keep being able to do that. Thank you so much for supporting me and loving me as I continue on this journey. And honestly, just thank you in general for listening, for subscribing, for being here with me. Like, I got a book deal because of you all, because you have followed me and amplified my voice and supported me. And now I'm able to spread my message even farther. And it's just it feels so good. So I appreciate you all bearing with me as I figure out this, you know, transitional period right now for myself and grow and, you know, navigate all of this. I'm taking you along day by day of the highs and lows of my overworking tendencies on Instagram. So definitely go follow me there if you're not already following me, Trust Your Body Project. And yeah, that's it. Okay, I need to stop talking. Let's get in. All right. Love you all. Thank you. Bye. So today we are talking to Erin Colleen Garrity, who is a yoga therapist, recovery coach, and a yoga studio owner. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Hello, my pleasure.
Hi. So I literally just said this before we started recording, but here we are. I've been excited to talk to you because you specialize in addiction and eating disorders, and I get a lot of questions about it, but I don't have a ton of answers for people. So I am excited to get a lot of your knowledge around this.
Yeah, it's they kind of went hand in hand for me. And actually, and I'm happy to talk about how healing from addiction actually helped me heal from my eating disorder.
Yeah. Okay. So why don't we just start with what your story is? How did you get to this place now?
Sure. So when I was younger, I grew up in a karate dojo. I was always into athletics different ways, but karate really appealed to me because I really liked the full contact. It made me feel alive because I had been feeling kind of like numb, I think, my entire life, just kind of like as a young girl, like just feeling very disconnected because that's what was modeled for me from my mother. She had, you know, issues with pills and binge eating disorder, even though most of it was undiagnosed until like later on in her life. And then my father was a workaholic. So little Erin picked up on all those cues as far as how to numb out. So while in athletics, which is probably different from a lot of people's stories, but I started getting into pills and alcohol because when the adrenaline and the endorphins ran out from martial arts, you know, I still needed some sort of numbing device because I really didn't know how to process or handle my emotions like at all. The only acceptable emotion was like happy, maybe like super excited and very engaged. And I didn't know that like sad was okay and angry and all this other broad palette of emotions. So I started drinking a lot, like all the time, like just be like fall over drunk. And I was young when I got into martial arts. I was like tweens. Is that a word?
Yeah, definitely.
I was a tween. So then fast forward maybe like a year or two, I started getting into, you know, noticing boys and stuff, and also noticing my mom's pattern with dieting. And as far as her, we always had diet pills in the house, right? I would open up the cabinet for like spices and like diet pills would fall out. Like that's how, yeah. It's like an apothecary of diet pills. So I remember like reading, and I don't remember like a huge shame thing when I reached for that first bottle of pills with an intention to like change my body. For whatever reason, I started taking, because it was like, that's what you did. If you're into guys, then you had to be like a certain shape. I kind of saw that with my mom. She would like chronically like get really tiny, and then she would sort of like get into a relationship, and then she would, you know, just start eating normal, but then start binging because of the restriction cycle. So then I started with diet pills. I got really thin because I was barely eating anything because I was so speedy. And then, you know, I started getting tired. I started having crashes, and I couldn't like get up for school. And then fast forward to college, I was just like a wreck. So I started, once the effect of the diet pills wore off, I started binging and purging. Mm-hmm. And so I struggled with bulimia for 12 years. Mm-hmm. It was my coping mechanism. It was a way for me to deal with feelings that I just had no idea how to deal with. Like, I didn't know how to feel that vibration. It was not okay. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to access any of my chaotic thoughts. The only way I knew how to touch the pain inside of me was to hit or be hit. That's how I understood it for a long time. So that's kind of like my backstory as far as how I got better.
That's where I was going. So take it away.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. So just making sure there. Mm-hmm. I lived in Japan for a while. I taught English there. I was an English major in college, and I also taught women's self-defense there. I remember that like I was miserable there. My fiance had flown over, and we were depending on my income. So I was working all the time. So right, I had my mother's patterning, right? And then I went right into my father's patterning, just being the workaholic, you know? And so I was just like miserable. And I remember on my lunch break, I had been, by the way, popping pills at this point, Adderall, just to like keep me going. And because I was just so depleted from binging and purging all the time, just throwing up multiple times a day. So I was like so tired, even on multiple doses of Adderall. And I remember I was on lunch break from teaching my English classes in Japan, the place of my dreams, by the way. Like, I wanted to go to Japan so bad, and I was miserable there, and it didn't make sense to me. I'm like, why am I so freaking miserable? So anyways, I remember going into the konbini and like getting the biggest beer I could find, because I just didn't know how to handle my stress. I didn't know like at all. And so I just pounded that. Like, I probably reeked like beer. I went and I taught. And I remember like the shame that I felt on the way back riding the subway. I stopped at a McDonald's, and they had these things called Mega Makus, which was like a Big Mac, but like double. And I ate like three of those. I threw it up. And then the next morning I woke up and I was just like, it was kind of like my bottom. I was like, something's got to change. I wound up, my dad for Christmas had gotten me a yoga DVD. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, all right. Like, I guess let's try this. And I thought that it was going to make me like really muscly. And the girl on the cover was like super slender. And I believe it was Sheba Ray, but also muscly. I was like, well, I want to look like that, so I'm going to do this thing. So I popped in the video. I fast forwarded through all of the like OMI BS and like all like the chanting and all like the slow stuff, because I was like, well, this isn't burning calories. This is stupid. But then I saw like she was like really moving. I was like, all right, that part where she's sweating. So I hopped in. I was like up dogging, down dogging. By the way, for those listening, I'm like doing the motions as I'm saying it. So I went through the practice, and then at the very end, I was like lying on the tatami mat in my Japanese apartment. And I had a moment where my body lost all tension, and I softened, and I felt like a warmth go through my entire body. And I think that was the first time that I experienced God. I remember I could breathe deeper, and like I wanted to cry, but there was like a satisfaction of touching something deep inside of me in a different way that I usually had to get through pain. And once I was able to reach that space inside of me, it only lasted for like 5 minutes, right? I remember I was kind of like, where did that go? Like, what's that feeling? You know, cause like if we get a hit, you know, like addicts, like we're really addicted to chasing that, like that dopamine pop, that endorphin pop. And once we get something that we kind of like, it's very typical for an addict to get very like obsessive. So mm-hmm. it's like super obsessive about yoga. It's like looking for that little pop. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I would get it. Sometimes I wouldn't, because there is an aspect of surrender with yoga. So anyways, fast forward, I moved from Japan. I moved to Florida. I wound up, you know, starting a practice. I was like a personal trainer. I was a body worker along with a yogi. And then I wound up opening up my own yoga studio. And then fast forward 5 years, in between that time, I became a life coach. Learned a lot more of my body work, got some advanced yoga certifications. And then just recently I opened up my second studio. Here Amazing. I am.
Yeah. Well, that's quite a story. One thing that really resonated with me in regards to, I mean, my own history, and I would argue most, if not all of my clients, is growing up in a household where you're dieting is being modeled, but then also this sort of obsession with working really hard, and this the workaholic patterns essentially are being modeled as well. And because, I mean, it's no secret that eating disorders, like perfectionism, is one of those kind of common threads between people who struggle with eating disorders and people who struggle with addiction. We're never living up to our own standards. That's the kind of common theme. And so I know a lot of my clients have learned that from parents. And did you ever find that do you find that you still struggle with workaholic tendencies?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I definitely have to maintenance that. And I have check-ins with myself, and I have like symptom markers, you know, when, for example, one of my markers is like, if I keep losing my keys all the time, keep losing my keys, don't know where they're at. My car's messy. That's another marker. Everything, I'm just like in an overwhelm cycle. And it's mm-hmm. funny because when you go into that zone, like when you're overwhelmed, it's hard to make sense of all the stuff that's going on around you, right? But so I have a little check-in with myself, and it's mm-hmm. like, okay, keys can't find, car is disgusting. So then I'll just, those are just symptoms of me being too busy to really take care of myself. So mm-hmm. then when I turn inward a little bit more, I recognize, oh, I mean, I haven't been like, I don't want to say like brushing my hair, but like spending time with myself, like touching my body, you know, doing my yoga practice, you know, very regularly. And also the intimacy level with my friends, like I won't get back to them. So there's a lot of markers that I have. And, you know, because like feeling sometimes sucks.
Right. Yeah.
Like it's not always fun and you don't always want to do it. And so, And then if you love what you do, right? We love what we do. Like you want to serve, you're helping people. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful thing. And you can also hide behind that shield of like, oh, I'm out in the world and I'm helping and I'm a giver, you know, but, I was listening to, your podcast actually about the stress cycles and the burnout that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so there's like that overgiver syndrome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, if you hide behind that sort of shield of like, oh, but I'm giving in the world, like, it's actually the way I look at it is like, okay, maybe part of the intention is there, but also what are you avoiding in your life?
Right.
Why are you so busy to where you deplete yourself over and over again? And so that's, you know, as far as depletion, that's sort mm-hmm. of like, I need to keep balance because otherwise life kind of falls to shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And it can happen kind of quickly.
Yeah, it can.
Yeah. So why do you think, I mean, for people listening, why do you think that eating disorders and addiction and, you know, tendencies to overwork or burnout, why do all of these things go together?
Mm. So I believe that addiction and eating disorders all come from a space of having pain that is unaddressed below the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So people have belief systems, they have trauma, they have all types of things. And I know that your listeners would know that you can have trauma and it doesn't have to be epic. Like nothing right. epic had to have, you didn't have to be in a war, you know, like mm-hmm. There's different levels of trauma that can impact you. and we feel blocked. We can't like touch that space inside of us. So then out comes a coping mechanism. Well, there's different things that were modeled for me. You know, my mom with the eating stuff and then my dad with the working stuff, which I could, you know, as far as like healing from these things, I feel like it's a daily effort of showing up for yourself and reminding yourself who you are now. But as far as the common thread with addiction and with eating disorders, there was always, I like to say, it was never the substance. Mm. It was always the pain.
Right.
You know? So I think that they're very interlinked.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting because I get that question around alcohol, you know, how is intuitive drinking a thing?
That's really funny.
I know, I get that question all the time. Like, how does it fit into intuitive eating? My body doesn't want alcohol, but like I want to go drink with my friends. And I'm a big believer that it is all about intention, and intuitive drinking can be a thing. Like if you don't have an issue with alcohol, if alcohol is not a thing that you're using to numb and to suppress pain and to escape and to become a version of yourself that, you know, whatever is happening, right? If it's just a social thing that's occasional that you enjoy and it's like not this way to escape or numb, then that I think is a healthy relationship with alcohol. And there really is, and obviously, I mean, amounts count too, but I think like in terms of substance use, it's not necessarily frequency as much as it is intention, in my opinion.
Yeah, because intention is that energetic pull or charge behind it. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was younger and I was drinking a lot, like my intention was to get drunk. My intention was to drink until I didn't feel anymore. Mm-hmm. That's way different than going out with friends socially and like sipping on a glass of wine.
Right.
So yeah, intention is definitely like a main thing with, as far as like causing addiction. You know, it's like food too, as far as like the intuitive eating movement, body pause movement, et cetera. Like, as far as, you know, there's sugar and gluten and all these different things. And like at different times, like your body is going to want different things, you know, like sometimes like I want to have like salads and smoothies. Other times, like I just got down like half a bag of pretzels yesterday. It was so good. So your body calls for different things at different times. But like, if I go to that sugar or pretzels or whatever, like with the intention of like, I want to not feel my feelings, then I fall into like a binge cycle. Mm-hmm. But I think it's amazing as far as like addictive qualities. For sure, like sugar probably strips some nutrients in the body, right? Like if you have sugar all the time, that's probably not great. Just like alcohol, like literally strips the minerals and nutrients out of your body, which would have an impact on your mood, an impact on your digestion, et cetera. But if your intention is, you know, like you love yourself, you care about yourself, and you're just, again, in a social situation, or like you're just enjoying food as like, it's just food and it's neutral. And it's not like, you know, you're worried about like, I'm going to gain so much weight if I eat this, like then it starts like a shame cycle. And then as far as intention, like there's just all these negative feelings. And then you want to numb out, whether you're pounding beers, popping pills, or like eating an entire gallon of ice cream, you know, like it's all about intention.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. It's interesting. I always tell people that, you know, part of what's happening when we sit down to eat and we're stressed out about weight, or we're stressed out about our body, or stressed out about food and afraid of it, is like your body reads that energy and it reads that fear. And biologically speaking, if we're sitting down to eat something or to do anything really, and we're overcome with fear and anxiety and stress, the body is sending off like red alert signals, being like, what is about to happen? This is not good, you know?
This is something bad, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas if you're sitting down to eat the exact same thing, but you are in such a peaceful place where you're enjoying yourself, like you just said, it's so different.
Yeah. An interesting thing about having had an eating disorder and having had like multiple addictions is that when I started healing from my addiction, I started being able to heal from my eating disorder and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I eliminated alcohol. Obviously pills aren't great to go back to, but alcohol is something that like a lot of people do socially. Mm-hmm. And so with my eating disorder, I started like learning how to slow down and like be with myself when I was eating. when I first tried to do that, I didn't realize how freaking anxious I was, like, cooking, because like my body again was in that fear cycle of like, oh crap, there's something bad that's going to happen. So when I would be like cooking or preparing food and I knew that I was going to eat, my body was preparing for me to like fill it up and then empty it out. And just like the horror. And it's like, I mean, to purge is like really violent. I developed an ulcer, you know, when I learned how to like slow down with my food and actually kind of like be with it and be present and learn how to, when I did that, I actually started establishing a relationship with food. If you're going so fast and you're not noticing the details of something, then how can you even have a relationship with it at all, you know? And I attribute that to yoga because I learned how to breathe and I learned how to slow down. And so I started healing my relationship more and more with food. And so now I go to addiction. And so I'm thinking, okay, I had been off alcohol for about 2.5 years. And situations would come out with like, I was with my parents or, you know, like my ex's parents. And I'd want to have like a glass of wine and kind of like join the party, you know? And so I started actually kind of like studying people, how they would drink, because I didn't know how to drink properly. Like right. I knew that I, you know, in the past I had a mission, I was going to like down the hatch and then, you know, like just not feel anything. Mm-hmm. But because I like liked myself more and like being in my body was okay, I didn't want to like, again, my intention wasn't to like completely numb out and leave my body. And so I would watch people drink and just like notice how they would take like a small sip. And I felt kind of like a little kid, like at a tea party, like playing pretend at first. But then I'd start to notice, and this is the funny, like I laughed when you said intuitive drinking, but I really think it could be kind of a thing. Like I would notice with each sip, like I'd really pay attention to what it felt like in my mouth and like how my body would change like subtly. When we're too fast, we don't notice the subtle shifts within us. We don't notice the subtle shifts in other people, right? And so you're not really like connected. But because I was more connected with myself, right? And I would notice things like for example, with eating, I didn't notice when I would be like kind of like satisfied. I would notice, oh my God, I'm starving out of nowhere. And I would notice like, oh God, I'm uncomfortably full. What the heck?
Right.
You know, when I started like slowing down, I was able to savor. And so I did that with alcohol. And then all of a sudden, I was nervous, by the way, the first time I remember I ordered a glass of wine, I got just kind of like looked around and I think everybody else is a little nervous too. They didn't know what was going to happen, but I just like sipped. And I was like learning and, it was like pleasant. And I was like, it was so much better than getting like super drunk and like throwing up and like numbing out, because I was actually like with myself. And so I got to experience myself in different ways. You know, it's like when you, I don't know, if you really love someone, like a friend or a partner, and you get to see them do different things and wear different hats and be, you know, like express themselves in different roles, it's very like satisfying. So like, oh, I love this person. Like, wow, that's like fun and exciting. So it was really neat to meet Aaron, who could like just have a couple of sips of wine, which by the way, at first it didn't really take much. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I feel good. And then, you know, with eating, like that process, like the, with the proprioception of the stomach had to adjust. So the relationship that I had with myself healed and I learned how to connect. So then I learned how to heal my relationship with food. I learned how to heal my relationship with alcohol. And I'll tell you, with somebody who, you know, my name of my coaching company is Thriving After Addiction, my book, Thriving After Addiction. So people often assume almost all the time that I'm just like sober and, or that I don't drink or do anything at all. And they're surprised that I can have a drink, but I really can. And it's because of the work I'm doing in the background. And if I'm true to what I preach, as far as like, it was never the substance, it was the pain underneath. If I'm doing that work to dig into that pain and like process it, like I've learned how to sit with my feelings. Do I want to sit with them all the time? No. definitely don't. And then I'll find myself working again, right?
Yeah.
Or doing something else, falling into some sort of other pattern. But I know how to, and I show up for myself much more often. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually going to ask about that because I noticed on your website, you have a course for people who are already in recovery, teaching them how to process emotions. And that is something that, I mean, I have a lot of familiarity with AA. I have a lot of, you know, my dad struggled with addiction. Like I have a lot of personal relationship with that. And I understand the premise of AA and I totally respect it for the people it works for. And I like would never sit here and be like, that doesn't work. But I also think that it's missing components. And I think that there's this piece. I'm just curious why you created that course. And if that's something you also felt like that it's missing, this sort of teaching people how to actually process emotions.
Yeah. In 12 step, a lot of times people are stuck in their story, right? They spin in it. They tell the same story and there's catharsis that happens with telling your story for sure. Your truth needs to be told, but also at a certain point, once your story is told, you know, your subconscious, like your body doesn't know the difference between, you know, if you're telling a story and you start to feel those feelings again versus actually having been in the situation. Right. So I just found it not productive to over and over again go through that loop and it would just burn you out. And then the hyper identity with being an addict, like I don't think at a certain point you have to like, sort of like shed it off and evolve. Right. So as far as emotional processing, if you're spinning in your head in a loop in a trauma story and you're not feeling and getting beyond, rather than have it on a repeat, like why not go in, like release from the story that you have up in your head, go into your heart and just experience and see what's on the other side. What's underneath that pain? Like what caused it? You know, like rather than treating the symptoms, right? That's what I believe AA does. I think that it treats the symptoms. I think that it has, like you mentioned, a lot of great elements. And I think that for some people, it's like the magic bullet. Like it works for them. For other people, and I've worked with a lot of people that have been out of NA, OA, AA, they find that in their life, they're repeating patterns, right? So maybe they're not drinking anymore or like doing drugs or what have you, but they can't maintain a healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. They can't like, you know, show up to a job they're really passionate about. They've forgotten how to dream. When you're stuck in that story and again, in that fear cycle, like you can't access those deeper parts of you. So I said, you know, earlier that when I practiced yoga for the first time, I think that's the first time I experienced God because that was like me getting out of my pain story and actually being present. Mm-hmm. And being present is a skill.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. That's why I have a job. Like, that's why I have a yoga studio is because like the practice of being present rather than the mind catching on to all of these things, it takes effort, it takes work, but I show people how to stay with themselves when they want to check out, when they want to leave. And I could tell when they do because their eyes are fluttering all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I basically kind of, whether it be through Skype, energetically hold their hand, or if they're an in-person client, like literally hold their hand and we breathe through it. And sometimes like in that hardened layer of emotion, there can be hidden trauma, right? There can be inner child work to be done. There can be, I mean, just all types of things. And the technique of actually experiencing myself and like finding that freedom through compassion and letting go was taught to me by one of my mentors, but my main spiritual mama, Franny Hoffman. And the first time that she had me experience that, I was like convulsing almost. It was like a freaking exorcist. It was kind of like scary. And afterwards, I literally felt like I had multiple orgasms because I had been so tense and tight. And then all of a sudden when I let go and I was just like breathing, I was like, I feel really good. It's like, you're so tight and tense. Like if you're in fear all the time and like you're angry, you know, like you're just like, you're a shell of a human being. That's just like so reactive and so like what if you can find peace by like surrendering that and letting it go? You know, there's effort can only get you so far. Same thing in yoga. I like to say stirham sukham asanam. It means steadiness and ease in the posture. There needs to be firmness, but there needs to be softness. Mm-hmm. So finding that softness is key as far as finding that surrender, opening up.
So to kind of ground this in some practicality for people listening, because I think that when you're in it and you're in that fear cycle and you're going and you're reactive and the ego is running the show, it's hard to comprehend that something else exists.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so bizarre thinking about a younger version of myself being so ego-driven in the way where I was, everything was like an attack at me and everything that was out of my control was like the worst thing in the world. And, you know, I took everything personally and I was just like going. And it's this, the shell of a person thing really clicked or really hit for me right now. Cause I was just like, yeah, that's how I felt. But I didn't know that that's how I felt until after. Like now I can say that, but at the time that was my reality. So what are some practical things that people can do to start to slow down no matter where they're at in, you know, this process of connecting to themselves, you know, practical things that people can do to slow down and just like reconnect with themselves and process emotions if they have no other kind of background on this.
Yeah, sure. So pranayama is one of my main tools that I use as a coach or yoga coach, whatever you want to call me. So we can do some now. And your listeners kind of like follow along. Yeah.
All right. Let's do it.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So what we're going to do is 5 rounds of this breath. I combine it with some other things, but it's essentially called Kumbhaka. Mm-hmm. So if anybody wants to look up this style of breath, pranayama, it's called Kumbhaka. And this style is Kumbhaka Puraka. So I'm sure everybody will remember that. But what we're going to do is take 3 regular breaths. And on the third inhale, we're going to hold the breath. We're going to lift up the pelvic floor. So women who are listening, it's kind of like a light Kegel. Men who are listening, it's kind of like stopping the flow of urine. And you're essentially lifting up your energy, expanding your ribs, holding it, and then slowly exhale. So just a disclaimer, if you are driving, wait until you get home to do this. Make sure that you're comfy.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So just take a deep breath in. Exhale. Good. One more. Exhale. And then your next inhale, breathe in through your nose. Hold it, lift it up, tighten the pelvic floor. Keep holding, holding, holding. And then when you feel a lightness and a release, exhale. Good. Just notice any sensation and opening in the body. And let's do it 2 more times so you can feel the effects. So I'm going to take another deep inhale. Lift up the pelvic floor, send the energy up. Hold it. Soften the eyes, soften the jaw. Exhale. Releasing the breath in a slow, steady stream, noticing your body, noticing my voice, noticing how you feel. Good. And we'll do it 1 more time. When you're ready, take a deep breath, inhale. Lift up the pelvic floor, send the energy up. And exhale. And then just take a moment to enjoy the 4th syllable, silence. And just notice your body. When you're ready, you can softly blink open your eyes. Hi.
Hi. My eyes are like not even open anymore.
So, you know, a lot of like I work with the breath and yoga and stuff, and it's so magical because it sort of, as I say, hacks the nervous system. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you can coach someone, you can tell them things and they know what they're, you know, supposed to do and they're supposed to listen to their body and blah, 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 blah. But if you're speaking to, again, that shell of a person because they're so caught up in their head and they're so like tense in their body, that like I find we need like a quick instant gratification, right? That's what people who binge like. We want instant donuts in our mouth and down to our belly or whatever, you know, I said donuts, but whatever your food of choice is, mm-hmm. you know, with popping a pill, with slamming a drink, we want instant gratification. So the pranayama techniques really help people to feel a little like lighter, feel a little bit more like their body comes to life. You know, once we do that, then it sort of like softens a little bit and opens things up to where we can actually kind of get in there and like feel the feelings a little bit more and people know it's possible.
Yeah. I love that. That definitely, it took me a second. My eyes were like blurry while you were talking at the beginning. I was like, oh, I'm back. yeah, that was really nice. I hope the people listening enjoyed it as well. Yeah. Or will enjoy it in the future.
Yeah, exactly. If you're driving, don't do that.
Yeah. So I guess my last question for you is, why do you think it's so hard for people to let go of their coping mechanisms, whether it's addiction or food or pills or whatever it is, even if it's just technology numbing out in any way, like why is it so hard to let go of?
Yeah. So there's, I think there's different reasons, but you know, unaddressed pain underneath would be an obvious answer, right? You know, on the surface level, people could be like exercising and drinking like their 10 glasses of water and like meditating, but like they're not really connecting to themselves, right? They're just going through the motions. Mm-hmm. And so there's still this pain underneath. So say like, you know, months go by and I'm showing up, I'm doing everything I should, but I still feel like shit. Like at a certain point, like it's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. You're going to go like, you want to feel good, you know, at a certain, of course, like in life, you know, there's a deal where you have to experience a broad palette of emotions. Mm-hmm. But if you're like just living in shame all the time or fear or guilt or anger, like it's exhausting. Mm-hmm. It's like a full-time job. Yeah. And so I think people just get exhausted. And then, so I like to look at these things with compassion. And that was very helpful for me because I was, you know, like almost everyone, I mean, pretty much everyone I've worked with has had an eating disorder, has been a perfectionist. So I think compassion is sort of like a little bit, just softens everything a little bit. So there's the cycle of like not wanting to feel your pain. All right. And then there's like not knowing what to do about it. Right. Mm-hmm. So again, like people are doing everything they should, and then they, you know, they're just not connecting to where it really exists, which is within. So when they have a method, sometimes it works. And again, when I first start working with people, a lot of times they've experimented with certain techniques and they've actually like, they know that they have hope mm-hmm. that they don't have to live this way. So then the consistency of showing up. So there comes in a certain point, you have to start to love yourself. Yep. You have to start to, yep. You have to start to accept yourself. Mm-hmm. Like what you mentioned with your younger self, like she didn't like when she couldn't control everything. Mm-hmm. And so I remember with my, you know, especially with like alcohol and pills, I just had to control everything. Like I wanted to feel a particular way all the time. Because I didn't know how to be with my feelings. I had to control them. Mm-hmm. And when you're trying to do that, you're also trying to control your situation, everybody around you. Because if they act in a certain way, it's going to cause an emotional response in you, which you don't know how to control, mm-hmm. right? So I have a lot of compassion with people who keep going back towards their substance. They're not ready to be worked with because, and they can, you know, listen to my podcast. There's a bunch of stuff out there. They can listen to a book, like get help with like a therapist. But the people that I work with are the people that are already in recovery and have at least touched that space of pain on the inside of them. Because like, again, the whole shell of a human being, when you're like in the throes of specifically addiction, like you, it's not like, it's like you're talking to the drug. It's like you're talking to the alcohol.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And it just can't work as far as like the type of work that I do, because also if they haven't learned how to handle their pain at least a little bit, What do you think coaching does? Coaching brings up a lot of pain.
Right.
You have to be ready to process it. So I show people how to process, but in that process, it brings up stuff for you to, you know, let go of. So I think the main thing is just is pain, and then just like not knowing how to access yourself, because effort only gets you so far. Just like in the yoga practice, like you can be firm and strong and tough, right? But at a certain point, to get into the postures properly, there's a softness that has to happen, mm-hmm. right? Like just like any sort of relationship with another human being, you can be like fun and exciting and like happy and dancey, but then like we're not always like that. Like you have to learn how to soften and be cool with like uncomfortable situations with other people, right? And be willing to sort of like stand in the fire with them. So that's the main reason.
I have one last question based on everything you just said. For people who are struggling, I don't want to call it struggling, but who are trying to navigate a relationship, whether it's a family member or someone close to them, a friend or whoever, with someone who's struggling with addiction, and the person who has the addiction, it is like talking to the substance and not to the person. How, like, what is your advice? Because I run into this a lot and it's so hard. So what is your advice for someone who has a family or friend who is going through that?
That's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up, because I had to learn how to do that with my mother and with my brother. My brother was addicted to heroin and pills. So the best thing that I learned how to do was to love from a distance. You can love someone, but that doesn't mean you enable them. And I think that's really important, because loving an addict, and I think I have at least one podcast on this, if not two, as far as, you know, a lot of times like people's love languages is like giving, mm-hmm. right? Give. And like, you see that other person in pain, you know, but like, it's hard, man, especially with like hard drugs. I mean, I've seen it and experienced with alcohol too. People get manipulative because it's like the drug is controlling their brain. So like for you to keep you safe in this relationship, right? Strong boundaries are necessary. And with those strong boundaries, loving from a distance, it is possible to, and I have this relationship with my eldest brother. I love him. Mm-hmm. I love him sincerely. This is the man that pushed me down the steps and almost broke my neck. This is the man that broke my nose. This is the man that used to verbally abuse me. I had to do a lot of work around this, but there came a point where I had to help him get into rehab. We had to transport him from New Jersey down to Florida. It's a long story, but to be able to do that, I had to love him. Mm-hmm. And also, the more love that you could put out in the world, the better it is for you. But as far as like, if you're struggling, if you're listening to this and you have a family member or a partner that is struggling with addiction, you can choose to love them. And from a place of love, you can set firm boundaries with consequences. Mm-hmm. So if they violate your boundaries, you remove yourself from the situation. That's always an option that you can have. You can hang up the phone. You don't have to stand in and get abused, because here's another thing too, is when you learn how to give that firm kind of love, mm-hmm. it's going to help them too, because one of the worst things, and this like codependency mm-hmm. is so rampant in the addiction world. Mm-hmm. You know, like we just latch on it, because you can get addicted to people too, right? We get creative. We can get addicted to all types of things. So having those boundaries and having that space with that person lets them dig out their own resources. Yeah. To do that, you have to be okay with them suffering. You can give advice, you can love on them, but you can't control them.
Right.
And that is really, really hard. And I get that, especially when you look and you see someone that's like almost kind of like killing themselves in front of you.
Right.
You know, being able to hold that firm, loving space and guide them, because that's all you really can do.
Right.
You know, and that is when I learned how to do that. And I'm not saying it's easy, but it's better than the alternative. And it will make you strong, and it will strengthen your relationship with this person. Like, it is worth it. And that's kind of the way that I've found to navigate a relationship with an addict. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. I love that. Especially just emphasizing like the role of boundaries and the role of having consequences for those boundaries being violated, because, you know, I know a lot of my clients have expressed, it feels like I'm abandoning them. It feels like da, da, da. But it only feels that way because oftentimes the person who's struggling with the addiction communicates that, like, you're abandoning me or whatever, yeah, all this stuff. And it's, mm-hmm, and that's not healthy for either person. And that's how you get sucked into it. And so having consequences, like, boundaries are nothing if you don't act on them when they're violated. Like, you
absolutely
got to actually enforce the boundaries. Mm-hmm. You can't just say them and then let people walk all over them. Like, it has to be, you have to protect your own energy, protect your own space, and love from a distance, like you said.
Yeah, because boundaries without consequences, when they, you know, just bowl you over, basically you're teaching them that your word means nothing.
Right. Well, thank you for that. I have been getting a ton of questions about that recently, so I know that this is going to be a very helpful episode.
Yay!
Yeah.
Glad to help.
Where can everyone find you? I know I mentioned at the beginning, but what do you got going on? Share with us.
Yeah. So my website is thrivingafterdiction.com. I have a podcast called Thriving After Addiction on Amazon. I have a book called Thriving After Addiction. If you're ever around the Florida area, I have a yoga studio. You can go to thriveyogafit.com. I do yoga teacher trainings. I do yoga retreats. I'm all over the place. You can find me somewhere. So
I love it. That's awesome. Yes. I love this new world of entrepreneurs. Like, everyone's like, you have to specialize. And you're like, well, I can specialize in a couple of things.
But I won't.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Erin. I appreciate you coming on the podcast.
If you are loving the Trust Your Body Project podcast and are ready to dive headfirst into your healing transformation, head on over to whitneycatalano.com/food-freedom to learn more about working with me. whitneycatalano.com/food-freedom.